extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Kalen Carr. It is my second favorite show of the year. My first favorite is, of course, the prediction show before the season starts. We're just throwing everything against the wall. My second favorite is the Extra Time Awards. Why are they my favorite? I just read lists. What's up, guys? How are you doing? How are you feeling? We've gone through like a 2-hour pre-show meeting to prepare for this, at the end of which David Goss said, "What are we doing on this show?"
And so, I didn't get an answer to that question, so I'm still wondering.
There's your answer. I just told you it's the award show, okay? Week 33 in the books.
But no one's wearing bow ties.
That's true. That era of tuxedo t-shirts is a bygone era. Maybe not over forever, but over for now. Do you remember the skit we did at the beginning of that show?
I think Type 5 as an opener. It was good.
Yeah, that was some good stuff. Went back and watched that.
You think that's going to fly on Apple next year? You think that
only the originals know? Look, if they're looking for innovative content, they just need to go look back at Extra Time Lives of years past. Okay? If you want to see Dave and I dance with the LAFC fans, if you want to see, I don't know what all we did over the years, but yeah. So we're going to make it brief, I think, on the actual soccer from this weekend. You've got a lot of resources for that. Dave, this is your cue. Step in.
Yeah, we did a 55 minutes on MLS today.
Wait, this is the time where you say, I heard you call out me on the Thursday show to say this was a Kalen plug, which I'm not sure if I took as a compliment. I don't know how to feel about that.
Kalen,
you just plugged the fact that you got a plug, bro. So why don't you just own it?
All right, go for it. Let's do it some justice, Goss. Right,
let me get the helmet on now. So MLS today, search on Spotify or any of your podcast apps. We did 55 minutes reviewing the weekend today with Susanna Collins. We're going to have guests to dive into all of the teams that are still fighting for playoff spots. We'll have LAFC guests as well. We should have some players stopping by as well this week, live every day, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Twitter Spaces, or search MLS Today.
And that is they go positive Sunday nights. Charlie and I go positive, but also very negative at times. So MLS After Dark, if you need the whack side of week 33, Charlie likes to take people to task. So
which must have been a tough one, considering every eliminated team beat every team that was fighting for a playoff.
We had a laundry list of whackness on Sunday night. We really enjoyed doing that. So a lot of fun. Go check those out for the full recap. We'll do a little recap here, and then of course we'll go through all of our awards. We'll start with the traditional awards. Well, I take that back. We'll start with Best 11, presented by our old friends at Continental Tire. We have five again this year because nobody does best 11s like Extra Time does best 11s. We'll go through the traditional awards. We'll go through all of our awards, of which I've split some in half. I've invented others. It's a lot, but it is the exact type of MLS nerdery that we think that you're here for. And if you're not, I guess... What?
Dr. Taquito
is just fart. Was that what was that?
Dr. Taquito is destroying General So right now. I'm about to, Rebecca. Any chance you could feed the cats so that we could do our?
Somebody get a water bottle. Somebody spray these cats. Oh my god! Sound like a whoopee cushion. Oh my god.
I was like, I didn't know we had special effects on this show.
Yeah. Woo. Okay. The long history of random noises on this show. That's one of the most delightful. Okay. So best thing we saw in week 33, then we'll get to it. Into the playoffs, the LA Galaxy. I mean, a lot of teams backing in, so to speak. At home, LA Galaxy, RSL in town. They draw, but they're into the playoffs. Nashville SC, Houston Dynamo in town. Kalen, I know, you know, I'm not going to call them patsies, the Houston Dynamo, but fairly close to it.
This time of year. No, don't say that.
2-1 win for the Houston Dynamo. Tough one for Nashville at home. Red Bulls are in. They lost as well to the Crew and got in. NYCFC did win. They got a home game. So that's sort of your update on the standings side. All those teams have X's next to their name now. They are still competing for spots in the East and the West. We'll get to that, but we have a trophy that was handed out, Doyle, and that's the best thing you saw in week 33.
Yeah, LAFC winning the Supporter Shield, deserving winners, even though obviously things haven't gone necessarily as expected since mid-August. I just, like, every time I see a team win this thing and celebrate like crazy, which they did at Providence Park, every time I hear the announcers on ESPN talking about what an accomplishment it is, you know, national media writing it up, it makes my heart sing, man, just because, like, I remember 10 years ago, you know, when I first started 12 years ago, when I first started working for MLS, like, nobody cared about the Supporter Shield. Nobody. And I would write about it every damn week. I would like angle my column towards, like, okay, what's going on with the Supporter Shield race. And, you know, this is the best trophy to win and blah, blah, blah. And like, I still feel that way. It's like, you just gave your fans 7.5, 8 months of great soccer. It's the best representation we have of what the best team in the league is for any given year. And this year it was LAFC, deserving winners. They didn't do it in quite the style that I think a month and a half ago we all would have expected from them. But they, you know, sometimes it's about X dog, and sometimes it's about overwhelming talent. And when you could have Carlos Vela, you know, curling it in, sort of a patented goal from the corner of the box, and then Dennis Bouanga and then stoppage time dribbling the entire Timbers defense and scoring a goal that only a handful of guys in this league could score. It was like that. That's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. And they're going to get a lap of honor next week in front of their fans, and they deserve it.
It's the second in 4 years, I believe, second in 5 years. First time a team has done that as an expansion team. I think that's pretty self-evident. Do we need space here, Kalen, for the Supporter Shield rebuttal? Or are you like partial truther here? I don't feel any real passion from you. We normally used to get that when Doyle would go on his Shield rants.
No, I would say over time, Doyle is bringing me along. I'm coming along for the ride. But ultimately, it's still about MLS Cup. And I go back and forth. I always say, oh, can you name the Supporter Shield winners for the last 10 years? Unfortunately, with Doyle, he can. But I would say for a number of years that I played in MLS, I couldn't tell you who won the Supporter Shield when I was playing. But I can tell you every MLS Cup that happened really in league history. And then you look over the past, and I think in the case of LAFC, the thing that I always said was I think these two trophies are actually a little bit more intertwined, which hasn't been the case traditionally in the past, where a lot of teams sell out for the Supporter Shield and it's really hurt them. I think when it comes to winning MLS Cup, it's such rarefied air of the teams that have done both. But I think in the case of LAFC, they tried to figure out a bunch of different paths as far as what their lineup was going to look like. How do they integrate all these new pieces into it? And I think what we've seen over the last two matches or a couple weeks is them really solidify who their best 11 is. We've seen them come out, get results, and use players in their best. I thought, you know, they have the lead. They bring in Latif Blessing. They bring in Opoku. You see how that starts to make sense and how that works, right? And so I think for them to get the Supporter Shield, well, actually, I think it's been the result of them figuring out who they are and who they're not. And I think that's the place, if you're an LAFC fan, where you wanted to see them heading into the playoffs. But still, the big job is still ahead of them. They've already got a Supporter Shield. I know that's a huge deal, but MLS Cup, that's still number one for me.
I feel like they sacrificed maybe the historic aspect of this with that little run after the transfer window closed, and just sort of an acknowledgement of like, hey, we're going to do what we got to do to bring in max talent. Like, it's going to take us time to integrate it. It's not going to be the same team that was on a record-setting pace. And honestly, I felt like they let the Union in. You know, I felt like, okay, Union schedule, Union are going to do it. Union go to Charlotte, get smacked by Daniel Rios and Charlotte for nothing, and sort of gave this one away. But ultimately, LAFC earned this over the course of the entire season.
Yeah.
They were the most consistently great team. So, yeah, congratulations to LAFC. All right, let's keep running it down here. Best thing you saw, Dave, and as an ancillary question, how far away from the goal line is the penalty spot?
Everyone
you have
knows
this?
It's 12 yards.
See, the
issue is I'm a mitre guy, so I'm used to saying it in meters and not yards, so I wasn't sure. So I just wanted to be able to translate my knowledge to this fan base, which I've not been a part of for the last 10 or so years. And I would say that there was a lot of impressive soccer this weekend. People scoring goals from really far away, defenders making great plays, great passes, vision. There was nothing harder to do, if you ask Chicharito and Ricky Pouche, than scoring a goal from the penalty spot against one goalkeeper and no defenders. So enter Douglas Costa. You wanted a designated player? This is what you came for.
This is what you paid for.
Listen, families, teams, everyone has to have different skill sets to come together and be the best collective you can be. Not everyone can be scoring goals from the run of play or creating goals or helping defend. Everyone has to have their role. And we have found Douglas Costa's role. He clinches a playoff spot for the LA Galaxy after scoring on their second penalty kick attempt of the game. I believe the stat was they have missed as many penalties as 14 MLS teams have had in total this season. So welcome to Galaxy Ball, baby.
Yeah, I think that's five missed penalties for them. Ricky Pouge with the miss on this one. But Douglas Costa, look, he can't not go on vacation when he's not supposed to go on vacation. But by God, he's going to put the ball in the back of the net from the spot. That clinched LA a playoff spot, if you were paying attention. And it leaves this scenario in the West. There are two spots left. There are four teams that could claim those spots. Portland are in sixth on 46 points. Minnesota, 45 points. They're above the line in seventh. Salt Lake and Vancouver still alive, but under the line, 44 points, 43 points. Now, why is this interesting? Because it's win and you're in, because all four of these teams are playing each other on decision day. 5 p.m. Eastern is the start time for the Western Conference. Minnesota, in the midst of a collapse, hosting Vancouver, maybe the hottest team in the Western Conference. RSL, trying to bring the ex-dog with Portland in town. This is what we're here for. We're going to be live during decision day on MLS YouTube and Twitch. Bringing on guests, having fun, got the live standings rolling, yelling at the monitor, et cetera, et cetera. So
let me just make the point that this is unique, because in the Eastern Conference it's really tight as well. There's about five teams competing for three spots, but some of those teams can still lose a game, lose on decision day, and qualify if other results go their way. What makes the Western Conference unique is that it's these four teams who are competing for these two spots. Nobody can lose. Like the Timbers are in sixth place. If they lose, they're out. Because if they lose, RSL automatically jumps them. And whatever happens in Minnesota versus Vancouver, if Vancouver wins, they have the tiebreaker over Portland. So Vancouver jumps them. If Minnesota wins, obviously they jump straight over Portland. If Minnesota draws, they have the tiebreaker over Portland. So they jump, they end up on the same points. They jump the Timbers. Everybody has to get a result. It's absolutely wild. I don't think I've seen anything like this in 27 years watching and covering this league.
And if everybody draws, then I guess you just stay exactly where you are. Remember, yeah, it's points, it's wins, it's goal differential, it's goal scored. We're not rooting for draws. We want drama. We want wins. Go in there. Take your points. Take your playoff spot. That's what's at stake in the Western Conference. In the Eastern Conference, you mentioned it, Doyle, it's a little bit less straightforward, let's say. There are midweek games. Wednesday, Charlotte's hosting Columbus in a bizarro game that starts in the 16th minute because that's when it was abandoned. The two coaches have to put out the same lineups they had, but oh, by the way, there were transfers in the meantime. There have been injuries. So if a player was transferred out or a player is now injured, that's a free substitution, but then you still have the substitutions on the back end, but rosters are frozen.
Wait. Does the game start at the 16th minute then?
Yes, and rosters freeze, so only players on the matchday squad are eligible to play. But there are injuries and transfers, so you still got to pull from the matchday squad. It's a whole... I didn't realize this was the case until literally this morning. Thank God for Tom Bogert.
I feel like during COVID, we went through and did a bunch of imaginary matches. Like, what would be 98 DC United fair against 2017 TFC? Yeah,
this is happening now.
What would the October Charlotte and Columbus crew do against the... Yeah, it's very, very strange. And both teams are alive and need a result, desperately need a result. Charlotte at home. Miami hosting Orlando as well, by the way, Gonzalo Higuain. Just announced his retirement. That is an absolute tragedy. And then on decision day, you have Orlando, Columbus, Miami, Montreal, and Red Bull Charlotte. As it stands right now, Cincinnati at home with the fire in town blew it.
To these two?
Yeah. What? Who?
I mean, just They're brothers. Family. The brothers here. The family.
Familia. Yeah. Like our cousin Pepita, you know? Like, I'll miss him. He's been the best forward. Yeah, it's he's been the best forward.
Mi primo, mi primo.
Oh, you remember what he was like when he used to be playing in the backyard and we used to
make fun of him. Oh, God. Days growing up together.
Yeah, we beat him up, right? Oh, yeah. Cincinnati in fifth right now, 46 points. Orlando, sixth on 45. There's three teams on 45. Miami also there above the line on tiebreaker with 13 wins. Columbus have 45 points, but only 10 wins. And Charlotte down on 41. Basically need to win out to get this thing done. They've lost too many games this season. What's your moment of the weekend, Kalen?
Well, you actually just kind of teased it with the Columbus result. And Derek Etienne Jr., stepping up big when everybody was happy to write off Columbus and say the season was over.
Is that you, Caleb?
Say goodbye. Other Caleb, Kalen, yeah.
My phone auto-corrects to Caleb. So, you know,
that's what mine does to calendar. I'm like, it's my name. How's this happening? What's up with this? Yeah, Etienne Jr. stepped up big against his former club, actually. And you know, the first one, I think he did sort of like, you know, I'm not going to celebrate, but they had to kind of run back and get to, you know, to try get another goal. And then the second one, he also was kind of muted, but it's tough because the result and the goal was so big as far as a season-saving moment against your former club. Huge moment. And for Etienne, you know, he's a guy that I think at this time of year would be a very high pick. We're not going to do another draft because Anders will freak out. But if you were to give me, like, guys, Dyron, Rui Diaz,
we could do a playoff time, Golden
Mike
Boot
McGee,
draft.
Like, yeah, he would be very high up. Also, I think a part of a very prestigious list to have scored an MLS Cup, if I don't say so myself. but huge result for Columbus to stay on. They have, you know, still a lot of work to do. Massive big week, midweek game against Charlotte at Charlotte. We saw what they're able to do. And then they play Orlando on decision day. But Etienne Jr. stepped up big. That was the best thing I saw.
Huge moment. So did Gonzalo Higuain. We teased that retirement, but his goal in the 86th against Toronto was just absolutely crucial for Inter Miami, and they've needed a ton of his goals in the home stretch of the season. They won't get any more of those goals in the future. Doyle, I know you've been stumping for a TAM contract for Gonzalo to give him another year because he's been one of the most entertaining, productive players in the entire league after it looked like he was never going to reach that point. Mm-hmm. After it looked like his time in Miami was just sort of kaput, no good, never going to come good. I remember a few people, analysts, pundits, whatever, jokers, clowns, calling someone on the show an idiot for drafting him in the Golden Boot draft. And look at where I am now. Look at where I've ended up.
Oh, it's all about Andrew Weeby.
Exactly.
I've always said that from day one of this job. It's all about Andrew
Exactly. By the way, Inter Miami with this retirement, Tom Boger tweeting, Rodolfo Pizarro will not be back. Open DP spot. Alejandro Pozuelo is out of contract. Potential open DP spot. And Higuain will leave. So that's three DP spots. I don't know if that's how many you need for Leo Messi or how that works, but we'll see what happens in the offseason.
Can we just not overlook, because Doyle expressed like how fortuitous the scheduling in the Western Conference is, the reality that there are four teams fighting for two spots and they both have rescheduled games that is being played in the midweek.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
One because of weather, one because of the Open Cup. That all four teams play against each other. I know it's Yom Kippur and not Passover, but Dayenu, if they had just been in this alone, it would have been enough. But now we get these matchups. This is mind-blowing that it worked out this way.
Guys, do we want to do an impromptu Wednesday night MLS after dark extra time?
Yes.
Do we want to record it, or do we want to just drink some brown stuff?
I think it's a brown liquor special. Like we'll smash some back. If we want to record it, maybe, you know, David will give us the go ahead to throw it out on the MLS Today podcast feed. That's his baby. That's his call. But yeah. I feel like as that second game goes final, the people will want to hear from us.
I will ask for permission in these parts. We'll see. Where that goes. Right. Yeah, everybody else. I get it. Here's the Golden Boot standings. Well, that's weird. Where did those come from? Oh, my God. Anders did the calculations. In first, Andrew Weeby, 116 goals. Doyle in second with 115. I got a one-goal advantage. The marathon coming down to the line. here we are. Kaylin.
There's also a really heated battle for the spoon between Goss and I.
That's true.
I'm beating him by 4 goals right now and 3 assists. So I'm feeling good. But
I think the tiebreaker should be whoever has the person, singular person, who's highest in the rankings.
Yeah, well, I got Hani, so.
Ah, damn it.
Kaylin on 79, Dave on 75. This is an anecdote from Anders, and we'll get
to... Did Mason Toy get that goal, by the way?
No, he should have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. Well, way too much.
Yeah. They're out to get you. Here's how Anders described his process to calculate our Golden Boot standings before you guys jumped into the meeting. For Doyle and I, he goes to the stats page and scrolls down from most goals scored. For you two, he has to individually search because you're not in the list for the most part. You're players. Wow. So it's a bummer for you.
Everyone,
but it comes down
David
to the wire.
Goss theorem. My team's going to smash next year.
Yeah, you're going to kill
gonna
it.
Everyone's going to have a bounce back year.
Is this a keeper league? Is that what
you're doing? That's why I went young. Duh.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, of course. That's why you went Tati, right, Doyle? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's start with the traditional awards, the ones that are, actually given out. And we start with the MLS Best 11 presented by Continental Tire. There will be but one Best 11 presented by our old friends at Continental Tire, who have a special place in Extra Time Hearts. But we did 5 last year. Can we match that this year? Is that even a question? Matt Doyle did the honors. We will try to pick them apart. Let's start, Doyle, with our Best 11 for 2022. Put together by you, vetted by us, and approved by all.
Yeah, a couple of things that part
is not true. Okay,
a couple of things I take into account here is, one, it has to be a formation that is representative, a formation that teams play in MLS. Like, we see 4-2-4s all the time in best 11s or 3-3-4s. Like, nobody plays that. It's not
what you're
a
saying
real
is that this is not an all-star ballot.
This is not an all-star ballot. This is an actual team. Positions matter. I pick guys who played primarily at the positions that they're represented on these teams. I just want everybody to understand that. The other thing is that availability matters. If there are two guys who are really good, one guy plays 3,000 minutes, the other guy plays 2,000 minutes, the guy with 3,000 minutes is going to be on the team. And that's why I'm starting with Andre Blake as my goalkeeper for the best 11. Left back Kai Wagner, center backs Alex Collins, Jack Elliott, and Jacob Glesnes. Right back, wing back really, Alistair Johnston. D-mid, Victor Wanyama. Central midfield, Cifuentes from LAFC. And then on the two line, because this is a 3-4-2-1, I have both Sebastian Driussi and Hani Mukhtar. And our forward, against my better judgment, I wanted Chicharito for the first team. I was overruled. It's Jesus Ferreira for the first team forward. You want me to just go through all 5?
Any beef? Any thoughts on that? I think it was very clever of you to find a good way to get Driussi and Hani Mukhtar in, because if you're doing the best 11 and these are the two MVP sort of like top candidates, you've got to find a way to get them in and get them in a comfortable position. I thought the Victor Wanyama pick was interesting, and we'll talk about that more in our D-mid of the year, because that's a pretty competitive spot. There's maybe 3 guys that really would have a shout for that, and we'll get to them in a second. The wingbacks, I think, makes sense. Johnston, Wagner. It's hard to pick between the Philly guys to get Collins in. Bravo there.
My pushback, this all makes sense. I had DeAndre Yedlin as the best right back, which we have 5 more teams to put him on, but that was my one pushback. I think Alistair Johnston's been good. I think it took him a little bit of time to fit in, and now obviously he's been elite, especially in the attack. Yedlin as a leader for Miami, I think, has been on top of his play, and a back line that has been in complete flux, where Montreal on the flip side has been pretty solidified and locked in around him. That's where I push Yedlin above Johnston, but no complaints with him being in there. And I think I agree with everyone else on this list, including Jesus Ferreira, who we forced you to put on because he has 1 more goals than Chicharito. 2, he does more things than Chicharito, not just for his team, but on the field of the soccer game.
It's fair enough. I mean, it's obviously I'm not dying on the hill. I just feel like Chicharito is the best center forward I've seen in MLS this year. And I guess that's where I'll start for a second team. Chicharito is my center forward. We're going in a 4-3-3. The wingers are Carlos Vela. He's not the player that he was 2-3 years ago. He's still got, 12 goals, 11 assists, including a big one yesterday in what was a massive game. Diego Fagundes is my other winger. He's evolved this year into the player that I think we all thought he can be as a secondary goal or tertiary goal scorer, secondary creator. He's been awesome for this Austin team. The three-man midfield is I have Ilya at D-mid, Alejandro Bedoya, perpetually underrated at the number eight, and then Lucho Acosta as the number 10. Back line from left to right, John Tolkien, Kamal Miller, Walker Zimmerman, and DeAndre Yedlin. That was at David's insistence. And the goalkeeper is Georgi Petrovic, who is actually the best goalkeeper in the league this year, but only for 2,000 minutes. The fact that Blake played 3,000 minutes, that's the difference between one guy being the first team, one guy being the second team.
Yeah, don't got any complaints on this. I will say that as we go through center back, we had a difficult time. The pool of players that we felt is like uber deserving. When you knock three off in the first team, it, you know, it's not like you're going super downhill, but like, I don't think Walker had the same sort of season this year that he had last year. Kamal Miller was very, very good. So congratulations on him from going from a piece in Orlando that sort of was a afterthought. You know, I remember in the expansion draft being like, okay, this is the guy. Somebody's got to get him. There's value here. Like 400K in value. Was he going to be second team best 11? Was he going to play at a World Cup? I don't think that was any sort of certainty. So huge congratulations to him. And then, you know, we've talked about John Tolkien a lot. He's maybe one of those next players to get sold, but a really, really talented left back. All right, take us to the third team. What do you got here?
The third team, third 11 is goal. In goal is Aljaž Ivasić from Portland. Man, they would be down around 35 points if he did not have an absolutely monster year. Left back, Diego Palacios from LAFC. The center backs are Matt Hedges from Dallas and Jesus Murillo from LAFC. That's kind of like a team award for Murillo. I don't think he was incredible, but that defense was really good. He played the most minutes. He is a written in pen starter for them in big games. Steven Moreira is my right back from Columbus. He's been excellent as a two-way player. They ask a lot from their fullbacks in that system, and he's mostly delivered, I think. D-mid, Jose Martinez from Philadelphia Union. Central mid, Obina Nwodo from FC Cincinnati. He's been mostly a D-mid, but if you watch how he plays, he goes forward a lot. So I'm okay with him as a number eight. My number 10 is Daniel Gajdag, 19 goals, 9 assists for the current Eastern Conference leaders. And then left to right across the front line, Lewis Morgan, Brandon Vasquez, and Romel Kyoto.
Okay. You know, the one beef that I have as we go through here is I don't think that Paul Areola got in. I think I probably will argue this later. I think I probably would go Paul Areola over Lewis Morgan, but it's hard to argue against the production from Lewis Morgan.
No, less goals and less assists is normally.
Yeah, I said it's hard to argue against the production. I acknowledged that, okay? I acknowledge that. Any beefs here? I mean, I think it's...
Unfortunately, there are no beefs because the center back position is weak in Major League Soccer across the board. Part of that is where spending is, and therefore the attackers look better, and it's hard for center backs, but there wasn't a lot of lockdown center backs outside of Philadelphia that I think you lean on and say, oh yeah, that's a player who has to be there. And the argument with Murillo became like just trying to find people to put in to these positions first, who deserves to be there. And
by the way,
doesn't.
It's not that money is not spent on center backs. It's that there's a lot of center backs in the league right now who are making a lot of money, who maybe aren't performing at the level that those teams might have expected them to perform at, given the contract.
I also think... Go ahead, Kalen.
I too would put Areola, push him up the list. I think he's been really good this year. And then the other thing that stood out to me, just looking at this again, is the D-mid position. And I know you talked about center back being a tough one because of lack of depth. I think this one has a ton of depth. And you go through and you look at... You know, like between Wanyama and Ilya, and then you have Nwobodo and, you know, Martinez, who I think at times has been the best D-mid for me through stretches of the season. So it's that's like a stacked position that's been pretty difficult, I think, to when you start to put it into tiers. And I know we're going to get to that a little bit later as far as the very prestigious extra time award.
Yes. Well, it's got a new title sponsor, of course. So we'll nice. Give you that in just a second. Yep.
Let me just throw in there, because if someone's not been paying attention, Georgi Mihailović got hurt early in the year. Mason Toy basically hasn't played. Romel Kyoto has been not just one of the best strikers, he's been one of the most important players in Major League Soccer for what could end up being the second best team in the regular season. He never was really a true center forward in Houston. He's done it with Kai Kamara as a partner. He's done it as no partner. He's done it with Joaquin Torres. He's done it a lot of different ways, and he's been healthy and he's been consistent. Hasn't gotten suspensions for dumb stuff as well, which was an issue over the last 2 years. And so he's been phenomenal. And it's been behind a lot of the Vasquez, Ferreira, Bobisi, Jurisi, yeah, like golden boot combo.
Yeah, he's sort of picked up the mantle. You know, they've had 1v1 players or counterattack players in Montreal that have been a terror to deal with over the years. He's sort of the latest. Like, he gets you in the open field, and he just absolutely kills people. Yeah. He's gotten a lot more efficient in front of goal as well, which you see in his production. All right, fourth 11. What do we got?
Fourth team all MLS in goal, Brad Stuver. He's been excellent for Austin for two straight years now, and unlike last year, there was no big drop off from him in the second half of the year. I think he's actually gotten better down the stretch here as the rest of the team in front of him has struggled. Left back Jao Moutinho from Orlando City, when, like, as he starts playing better, he elevates that whole team, their ability to possess the ball and do good stuff with it. The center backs are Justin Glad and Jonathan Mensah from RSL and Columbus, respectively. Right back, Ryan Hollingshead. He's only got about 2,000 minutes, but they were damn good minutes. He adds
and they're on both sides.
And yes, they're on both sides, yeah.
A true Bobby Warshaw, modern man. That
college converted fullback.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, he just, from Northern California. Not a Stanford guy, but, you know, it all comes together.
Yeah, this, too, right? I think he's totaled he's equaled his all-time, like, best season as far as goal production goes, too.
He just said he has a knack for it. And this team, by the way, is a 4-4-2 diamond. So at the back point, D-mid Diego Chara, who is timeless. The shuttlers are Mark Delgado and Paxton Pomacall. The 10 is Carlos Heel. And the two forwards are Chicho Arango and Julian Carranza. Now, in the pre-show, Weeby made the point he wanted one of the other forwards who you'll either see on the fifth team or among the snubs, in place of Carranza. But Carranza's got 14 goals and 9 assists. He's arguably, now with Tati gone, he's arguably the best defensive forward in the league. Like, he is a big part of why that Philadelphia Union diamond 4-4-2 does not get pulled apart. He makes it really tough to distribute.
I acknowledge all of that. I go back to all these statistical arguments that you're making. Are you watching the games? Or are you just looking at the stats? Just to throw it back on you.
ATR awards, baby.
Little David Goss historical quote for you.
Didn't I just make it like completely?
Yeah, it was actually you started with the stats. I thought of that line. Then you went to the other side. Still need to get the line out. Give us your fifth 11, and then let's get going.
All right, fifth 11 in goal is Dane St. Clair. I have him edging out Sean Johnson there. Left back, Andrew Brody from RSL. Just in terms of adding value, coming out of nowhere to add value in the attack basically every game, I did not see it coming with him. And he's been fantastic for them.
Had an assist from right back today, this week as well. He was awesome.
Yeah. He's just a hell of a lot of fun. Center backs are Joel Waterman, flies very much under the radar for Montreal. His distribution is impeccable. It's one of the reasons why they're one of the best possession teams in the league. And then Ruben Gabrielsen from Austin FC. Like, they got that. They needed to get that signing right, and they did. He's been really good for them. Right back, I struggled here. I eventually went with Julian Araujo. He has had some bad defensive moments, but he adds so much to this Galaxy team pushing forward. And, like, that's who the Galaxy are. They want to get their fullbacks up. They ask a lot. He is mostly delivered in attack. This is a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1, actually. So the D mid is Andres Cubas, who came in midseason or early in the season for Vancouver, and is one of the best in the league at the position. Pablo Ruiz from RSL. I have him basically as a number 8 here, which is kind of the position he plays. But if you look at how RSL play, they have to make the game big. They have to hit a ton of diagonals to those full, but guys like Andrew Brody, Ruiz is the main guy for that. He's a linchpin for them. The 10 is Emmanuel Reynoso.
It hurts you to put him this far down, I gotta think.
It did. Because, like, at times this year, he was the best player in the league. Like, there's like a 12-game stretch in middle of summer where he was unplayable. Like, he was putting the ball in the net or, like, giving guys layups every single game. But he hasn't done it consistently over the course of the year. That said, he's still so good. He's, you know, fifth best number 10 in a league stacked with number 10s. That's pretty good. My front line from right to left, Facundo Torres, from Orlando City. I at times this year I thought he was just a guy, but he has disabused me over the past month or so.
That could be an ETR award, the just a guy award.
Just a guy award. Yeah. Brenner is the center forward, and then Paul Areola sneaks into the fifth team, just ahead of Talis Magno.
Yeah, Areola's production, I will say, tapered off a little bit, had a very hot start. I just think his overall contribution, again, you were making the point on Caron to both sides of the ball. I think his overall contribution would merit him being little higher. But
we saw some of what they lose this weekend when they played at Colorado. They had nobody like interrogating that space behind the Rapids back line. And Areola, even when he's not, you know, putting the ball in the net or getting assists, like, he's always making the defense work. And that's why guys like Jesus Ferreira or Alan Velasco have so much space to put up the numbers that they've put up. It's like, he's a guy who the box score does not, Paul Areola is the guy who the box score does not really do justice to how much he brings.
Dave, any snubs? Kalen, any snubs?
We have a list here that we went through. One that just popped in my head is Maxi Morales, though. And he hasn't played one position, but his level of play has remained insanely high for NYCFC as the rest of the team has been a mess. But he's played at D-mid and in multiple different midfields and all of those things. So that's one. Obviously, we've seen the impact of DeBassi over the last.
If Bukayo DeBassi was healthy, he might regardless deserve to be here. We might have overthought, like, galaxy brained that one away because he's not healthy right now. But I mean, his impact is,
well, he's missed a good chunk of the season. Yeah.
Is this one of those where in the past you see you get the award, you remember more with, like, when Aiko Parra was missing or other guys were missing in the past, where you see his impact when he's there, but then the absence of him says a lot too. Another one that stood out to me that was tough not to see on any list was Georgi Mihailovic. I just think he had such a great start to the season and was I think one of the top three candidates at one point. We were talking about around MVP.
He was the favorite there at one point.
And I think he had some really bad luck with injuries that came at the wrong time. And he was looking towards trying to get onto this U.S. team and the transfer abroad and all that, which he did secure. But I still think for this Montreal team to be at their very best and to really go far in the playoffs, they're going to need to get the old Georgie back and try and find that, because he just changes the way they're able to play and adds a different dimension as far as connecting and those late arriving runs in the box and just finding that those important moments in the match. So that was a tough one. The other one that stood out is just Zeller Rayon still. It's just like, he's just, as far as quality, I have trouble thinking there's a universe where he's not in the top five teams in MLS. But I guess when we went through the list, I could understand it a little bit more. Those were a couple that stood out.
The problem for Zellerion is literally the five finalists for MVP are the five in his position on this list, even for Gazdag, right? Like, he's probably going to be a top three vote getter, and he's behind two guys at his position. That was the same for center forward. Jeremy Obobese had a great year. Yeah. Gonzalo Higuain's obviously been phenomenal. Diego Rubio had 15 goals and 7 assists, most of it as a 10, but he's played in a lot of different ways. He's been awesome for Colorado this year.
You suffer when your team suffers, right?
Yeah.
This team's been bad, and I think Brandon Bye and Dewan Jones are on that list as well. And part of, for the Revs struggling this year, was drops in performances from those two in big moments. Robin Ludd's a huge one where he doesn't have a position for this list. But, like, he is one of the 55.
He might have been the best number 8 that I saw in the league this year. The problem is he only played that game for like 9. Yeah. Played that spot for like 9-10 games. You know?
I know that Anders really needs us to get this snub in from Anders, his personal ownership on this. Karol Swiderski, Anders says, absolutely should be on one of these five lists, and it personally pains him that he's not. And he will take credit for any and all success that Karol Swiderski has now and forevermore.
What's the Twitter handle that people can tweet at if they have issues or complaints?
Sports Viking, I think, is V-I-K-I-N-G.
Since the Seattle results, he may have just shut down.
Yeah, that's a Mariners only account, I think, at this point.
He's really active in the group chat until Sounders are not going to be in the playoffs anymore. That's very convenient of him. We have some, if they played the whole year, would be in contention here. Bernadeschi, I think he's like an early favorite to be in the best 11 for next year. That dude is just he is unbelievable, both on the field and it seems like off the field as well. Like he was doing chants with the Toronto fans after they lost at home on Friday night. Like he is really diving into this North
American
adventure.
He's going to be the better signing between. It's like, oh, they got Insigne and Bernadeschi, and it's going to be.
Yeah, that was the trickle. Like, that's
Bernadeschi's
trickle
the face of the team. Yeah. Can I throw in pretty much every team that finished high in the goals against list had defenders or center backs except for Red Bulls? But it's tough to pick one. Aaron Long, obviously big comeback here. Sean Nealis probably would be the one just because of the amount of minutes and what he's meant and sort of shifting between the center and the right center. But those two would be, I think they're right on the edge of this list.
If I did a six team, do you want to do a six team right now, David?
This is what he did last year. Last year we did four and you're like, I'll just rip a fifth one right here. Freestyle.
Nice.
The other, so I want to go back to the if they played the whole year. Bernardeschi and Insigne. Bernardeschi being the one who really jumps out.
Should
of
we do
two.
if they played a whole year 11? Like we could just
no. But like what I'll say is like Ricky Puig, he's unreal. What he has done for this Galaxy team, like he might be the best number 10 in the league now. And he's not the only great player that they added this window. Gaston Brugman's been huge for them as well, playing as a number 6, getting forward and scoring goals, but like doing the hard man stuff. So that like those two guys were incredible. Cucho Hernandez and Willy Agata, two like true, you know, goal hungry number nines who are always just making life miserable for center backs. And then two NYCFC guys. Look, the best player I saw in MLS this year was Tati Castellanos. If he was still here, he would probably be running away with the MVP award. But obviously he got that loan to Girona, scored a goal this weekend. And we probably won't be seeing him back in MLS for a good long while, if ever. I'm happy though that we did get to see Keaton Parks. Missed a huge chunk of time this summer due to blood clots. He's had that issue before. Hopefully they've cleared it up because we saw in the last half hour of NYCFC's win over Orlando this weekend, Parks only played about 950 minutes this year. In the last half hour of that, he was the best player on the field by a mile. By a mile. Like he just completely destroyed Orlando City's ability to press NYCFC. And suddenly this NYCFC team that has been hopeless since May, they're just creating like these sweeping 15 pass movements. And all of it is based around Parks' ability to get on the ball, suck the defense in, and then eliminate them with progressive passes. So if he had been healthy all year, I mean, he might have been first team. He's been that good.
All right. Anders says confirmed 2-hour show.
Chances that
here we are doing 20? We're doing 11. A minute on Keaton Parks, so it adds up, folks.
What are the chances that this first 11 is looks anything close to what gets picked as the MLS best 11?
Well, there's not going to be three center backs on the MLS best 11,
but I do think there will be the three Philly guys. Wow, Sounders, there you go.
Anders says he's got the wormhole into your brain.
I think there's no chance Cifuentes and Wanyama end up on the actual best 11 that people vote
for. But I do think it'll be Driussi and Mukhtar. I think Ferreira's got a chance, but it's going to be neck and neck with him and Chicharito. The voting is ongoing right now. I don't think you have to be actually filing your vote until after decision day. So I think if Chicharito gets a couple on decision day, there's a lot of recency bias that goes with the voting. And also just, you know, stars tend to get the votes.
Recency bias. Talk to Georgi Mihailovic. Am I right?
A lot of people making his interview you're talking about where he says, I didn't have the conversation I liked with Greg or is.
What?
I don't know. He had an interview. He said on the field at Montreal, he said, I didn't get the news I wanted from Greg about the World Cup.
Yeah.
Which
he changed his mind too.
Yeah. not super surprised about that one, but we shall see. All right. Traditional awards. Let's keep it going. Landon Donovan, MLS MVP, are five finalists. Warhani Mukhtar, Sebastian Driussi, no duh. Daniel Gazdag, Lucho Costa, and Jesus Ferreira. Those were the five that we picked out as finalists. We were unanimous, all five of us, Anders included, in voting for Hani Mukhtar for the Landon Donovan MLS MVP for the year 2022. Kalen, why does Hani deserve it? Be our voice.
Well, Hani, I think just by the eye test, to me, is still the most entertaining, exciting player in the league. I just think he has just this incredible ability to control the game or to make it in the moments that matter in open space, one-on-one, finishing, He comes up with audacious opportunities. And at times, you know, he's really carried a lot of the load. There was a while where it was him and CJ as the two-man team, but Hani has had to really shoulder a lot of the goal scoring this year in a lot bigger way. 23 goals, 22 assists.
11 assists.
11 assists? Okay. Yeah. I looked on the MLS site this morning and said 22.
He was like, these are good numbers. Oh, my God.
I looked at 11 on Google, and then I went on to MLS and said 22, unless I saw it wrong. And I was like, wow, I must have missed that.
Kalen just sees what he wants to see, apparently.
Just double it, yeah. Yeah, I just think he's, you know, this. It's often we see the MVP going to, well, it does often go to the Golden Boot leader, but it can also go to, at times, to, I think, teams that finish at the top, and Nashville have not been at the top, but they're a solid playoff team. And I think if you were to take it, he also has the argument going of if you took him out, the importance to the team. And we talked about, that was kind of an argument, I think, for João Paulo last year, where he got into the conversation and I think finished third because of his importance to the team. And we've seen this year, without João Paulo, that was difficult. And I think when you think of what this Nashville team would look like without Hani, that strength is his case as well. So, you know, just an incredible player to watch, my favorite player in MLS to watch right now. And yeah, it's been an unreal season.
If you watch him, he starts a lot of the plays that he finishes too. Like, he's the outlet into transition who finds the right ball, who has the sort of right pace of play, who draws defenders and then makes the run. I mean, he's just an incredible player. And if Nashville go anywhere, it goes without saying he'll be that guy. Driussi finishes second for us, and I'll take that one on. He was right there. It was neck and neck really through the end of August. Then the last five games, just a single goal for Austin as their form sort of collapsed a little bit. The good thing for Austin is that they still remain quite good at Q2. And that is where they're going to play every playoff game in the Western Conference that they have outside of against LAFC if it comes in the conference finals. They've already sold out their first playoff game in like 6 minutes. No surprise there. And Driussi has been absolutely wonderful. I think it's 21-7 for him. But just on raw production, I just don't think it in the eye test, as you said, Kalen, it doesn't quite measure up. And that's in no way a knock on Sebastian Driussi, because he is, in our opinion, the second most valuable player in the entire league in 2022. So I think for Austin and for Driussi, if they're, you know, if they're burned by that, there's the playoffs, and that's as good a time as any to flip that script and say, actually, no, it was me and it is us. We're the better team. We have the better players. So that'll be the test for them going forward. Dave, how about Gozdog and Acosta right behind? A couple of
For Gozdog, you have pure numbers. Obviously, third in the Golden Boot race, high on the assist list. But for me, what stands out for him is Julian Kranza didn't score his first goal until April, and Ure didn't score his first goal till May. And Gozdog was on fire to start the season. They would never have been in this Supporters Shield race if it wasn't for him. But then once those guys started scoring, he continued to pour it on and be a major part of that team. And he's able to find space out of that number 10. He does it in a lot of different ways, but that has been massive to carry that team, I think, early on and keep them at their level. And for Lucho Acosta, he's the high usage guy in this, where you take what Reynoso does well, but you also start putting up some of the numbers. Obviously, Brenner and Vasquez finishing is huge for him, but he could have more assists if they were actually even more efficient. And he has turned into one of, you know, the best pressing 10s in MLS, and he's constantly creating, and he does it against numbers as well. Often they have less numbers in the attack when he's able to create huge moments for them. So he's been pretty phenomenal this season.
I will just say he's second in key passes. If you go look at the underlying numbers for tens in this league, you go back to the fact that Carlos Hill is just freak. Mm-hmm. He is an absolute freak. He is so fun, and it's incredible that New England were not able to make the playoffs after a record-setting season with Carlos Hill in the team. Jesus Ferreira, he's the finalist, Doyle. Anything to add on that one? I mean,
we'll talk more about him later. He's a deserving fifth finalist here. The numbers are, well, like I said, we'll talk about Jesus Ferreira plenty in awards.
Just amazing that he is in that position. You know, Pepe was the sort of the star last year. He was the provider. He switched roles, and look what he's done. All-State goalkeeper of the year, it came down to two. We hyped Ivicic, so we got that one in. But our finalists were Ivicic, Sun John, / Dane St. Clair. We couldn't quite decide, but we knew they weren't going to win. Brad Stuver is here standing alone. Then the top two were pretty obvious. Georgi Petrovic and Andre Blake. We voted Andre Blake, Doyle, and I'll sort of let you take the reins here on Blake versus Petrovic.
So Blake's had another incredible season. I think it's basically since 2018, he's had four incredible like outstanding seasons in five. And this might be the best of them. The traditional numbers, you know, goals against, you know, shutouts, save, like all of that is through the roof. Up until this past weekend, which was 0% his fault, by the way, Philly were on track to have the second best defense in MLS history. It's still going to end up being like a top five defense in MLS history in terms of goals allowed per 90. Andre Blake is arguably the biggest reason for that. You know, Jim Curtin 3 weeks ago was talking about like, oh, you know, Gazdag's getting MVP talk. Shouldn't Andre Blake get MVP talk? And like, there's like, it's not just a coach stumping for his guy. Like Andre Blake is that good. Petrovic is better. So what made like all the stuff that Blake and Matt Turner have done over, you know, since 2018 in terms of just like keeping the ball out of the net, the most important thing in the sport, well, for a goalkeeper anyway, is by the eye test and then by the underlying numbers, Petrovic is it's like I almost cannot put it into words. The like all the advanced metric stuff says that Petrovic prevented more goals for the Revs in 2,000 minutes than Blake did for the Union over the course of 3,000 minutes. Now, part of that is the Revs defense was bad, so he had more cause, you know, more chances to stop. But part of it is that like Petrovic is that good. I like Matt Turner is the best goalkeeper I've seen in MLS over, you know, 4 years, over any 4 year stretch, because he never made a mistake. And they sold him to Arsenal for $7 million. And they brought in Petrovic and they upgraded. They upgraded from Matt Turner. They're going to sell this kid for $12 to $15 million. And he's not going to go to an Arsenal type team to be a backup. He's going to go to be a starter. What he did this year is. It's the goalkeeping equivalent of Vela's 35 and 15 or 34 and 15 season, except the Revs were so bad, Petrovic did it for a team that missed the playoffs anyway.
that's the proper. We just got done praising Carlos Hill and Petrovic and the story of the 2022.
Tells you about how the rest of the Revs were this
New England
year.
Revolution season goes on and on and on. Defender of the Year, and we're making history. We don't know if it's going to be actual history made by the official voters, Dave, but Stump, tell them why. Tell them why history is made in this category this year.
Because the Defender of the Year,
presented by Extra Time,
does not play on the equator. Plays out west. I'm guessing that's which way left back would be.
West, yeah.
If we were doing west, it, looking at a map. Equator goes. Hey, sorry, plays north. Well, that one really went far for me.
Wow, Magellan here.
Yeah. Kai Wagner is second in Major League Soccer in assists. Not for fullbacks. Not for defenders.
By the way, I did look up Hani Mukhtar's stats on MLS. I would like to apologize to the good people at MLSsoccer.com. Great work. It was very early before Sky Sports that I was looking up Hani's stats, so. Apologies.
So Kai Wagner is second in assists, and he starts for, as Doyle mentioned, top five defense of all time. He has played every single game this year up until the game we're about to play on decision day because he got suspended. And he has been a monster at left back. So Kai Wagner deserves to be Defender of the Year as a fullback in 2022.
We will see if that happens. It's never happened before. We've stumped for it before. I think a Kamar Lawrence season a few years ago, we gave it that treatment as well. We'll see how far our influence extends. If you have a vote and you're listening, just consider it. Kai Wagner, because there isn't truly a standout center back, like a standalone guy. Walker Zimmerman has been that over the course of the last couple seasons, although I think last year was a little bit of a toss-up. I don't think he was at that level this year.
Collins.
Collins has been very, very good, but...
Has missed a lot of time.
Yeah. Jack Elliott and Jakub Glesnes, it feels like they're just going to cannibalize each other's attention and votes.
Because they are the two best center backs in MLS this year.
And I just want to make the point that, you know, for the longest time, I think people rightly felt that D-mid was the toughest position on the field to play. I think over the past five, 6 years, maybe longer, maybe the past 8 or 9 years, that switched. And it's now center back. That's the toughest position to play in modern soccer, because you have to be able to like, first of all, you have to be an athletic freak who can dominate in the air, but also defend in open space. You have to cover for overlapping fullbacks, which means you need to have those, you know, cornerback hips able to swivel and contain attackers 1v1. You have to be able to do this while you're reading the game and knowing when to switch from being zonal oriented to man oriented, especially in transition. You have to be able to hit a pass, but you also have to be able to carry the ball out on your foot, because you have to, you know, compromise the defense. The only way to get inside an opponent's central midfield is to bring one of those guys out. And the way you do that is by having the center back carry the ball forward. It is the hardest position on the field to play in the modern game. I'm going to vote for Jack Elliott, even though the union didn't even nominate him. I thought he was the best center back in the league this year. But I'm okay with either him or Jacob Glessness or Alex Collins, who has been fantastic for NYCFC. And if he hadn't gotten hurt, I think Collins,
I agree,
would have won this award this year.
Yep, I agree. As it stands, though, we encourage you to explore Kai Wagner's Defender of the Year candidacy. And we have awarded him the prestigious Extra Time Defender of the Year, which comes with no contractual bonuses, hardware, or any other acknowledgement other than this small segment on our podcast.
That kind of feels like Kai Wagner's vibe. Feels like he should probably be happy about it.
Yeah, well, he's off. Tom Bogert says he's off. So this will be a goodbye gift for him. Maybe he'll get some other silverware with the union. Siggy Schmidt, Coach of the Year. Here are our candidates. Jim Curtin, Steve Cherundolo. They're at the top of the standings. That's the way that stuff works. Josh Wolf, big turnaround for Austin. Wilfred Nance, big turnaround, well, big improvement, let's say, for Club de Foot Montreal. And then we had Pat Noonan and Phil Neville joined by a slash here, as deserving of, as I think I was castigated by Charlie last night. I said, hey, Pat Noonan and Phil Neville should be in the conversation. He's like, yeah, but on the outskirts of that conversation, not as possible winners here. And our vote, Doyle went to
Wilfred
Nance.
Maybe I'll go back and listen to that show just to hear Charlie yell at Weed.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he does a lot of that.
That sounds like fun.
Wilfred Nance is our choice here for the Siggy Schmidt Coach of the Year. But this was a pretty stacked category this year.
It was. There's a lot of good argument. You know, every guy you just listed has a good argument and a couple more besides. But what Nance did with this team, bringing them from mid-40s to probably mid-60s in terms of points by the end of the year, that's the toughest thing for a coach to do, like to go from being a pretty good team to like one of the three best teams in the league. That is a massive jump. And the fact is they did it without adding any big pieces. They didn't go out and get a new DP this offseason, for one. And for two, the keystone for this whole thing was supposed to be Georgi Mihailovic developing into an MVP caliber player. And for 3 months he was, and then he got hurt in May, and we haven't seen that same version of Georgi Mihailovic yet. Montreal is still right there. If Montreal win this weekend and the Union draw or lose, Montreal wins the Eastern Conference. Like it's, and whether they, you know, whether they win it or finish second, I just think that like this team, you know, with guys who came from the academy, were cast-offs by other MLS teams. Kai Kamara came from the beach, you know, like guys brought up from Canadian Premier League. Nancy has checked every box in his 2 years that it took Jim Curtin, who I think is probably the best coach in the league right now. It took Jim Curtin like 5 years to check those boxes. So he's 2022, it's Wilfred Nancy.
So I think I agree with you. I think I will vote Nance. I'm waiting the extra week that we get here just to see what happens. Just one of the things on Josh Wolf, because to me, those are the two clear on their own. Wolf had a larger points turnaround than what Nance did. And he went from second to last in the Western Conference to second in the West, which is
he had a full year of Sebastian Giussi. Like if you look at their points per game last year, once Giussi got there, it was much better. So it's like
I don't disagree with that, Doyle. And they were extremely healthy. They lost except until Gabrielsen. Now they've lost almost no one to injury. Ringsman there, Urruti, Fagundes, all of them. But the turnaround, and then I'll add on that the soccer, right? They play lights by a chasm, their own style, at a level that no one else plays. Did I say chasm?
I can't.
It's chasm.
Yeah.
I can't call you out publicly for something of that nature, knowing my history.
And they have stuck to that the entire season, and they've done it at a high level, and they blew LAFC off the field in one of the biggest games. So I think I'm going to vote for Nanse, but to me, it's clearly between him and Wolf.
What do you think, Kalen? Anybody else deserving of a big shout here? I mean, Tarundolo in his first year as a head coach at this level is going to win the Supporters' Shield, did win the Supporters' Shield, and we're not really mentioning him.
Yeah, a lot to manage going through the different, you know, changing pieces throughout the season, the evolution of the team. So definitely give him a ton of credit there. I think we're also going to get to some of the executive of the year conversations, yep. Which I think might also play into kind of the way when you have two good center backs playing with each other on the union. Sometimes if you have a good executive, how does that sort of change the perception of the coach? But I like the pick with Nanse. I think Josh Wolf deserves a lot of credit because in some ways he was dealt a similar situation, not exactly because Inter Miami is such a different one and same with Cincinnati, but just being so low. And then the reason those two are rightly mentioned is they've been able to kind of like change the culture of something that hadn't gone well. Austin was really more about kind of continuing to build the culture and to like stay true to their philosophy. This was a team that couldn't score a goal at all and then continued their principles to continue to build forward. And then it kind of has really turned into this free flowing attack that we're seeing now. So
you guys, their DPs last year with Pochettino and Cecilio Dominguez. This is not just a rollover here from Austin FC.
Okay. But they were also fueled by the preseason predictions, so you have to take that into account here as extra.
That's like having a fourth DP.
Do we have a? Can we give out a bonus Siggy Schmidt Coach of the Year? Because if we can, going straight to Joshua, I'll say this about Wilfred Nanse as well. We talk about Wolf and his journey. You're saying the culture that he built. Well, remember the situation Nanse inherited, like with Thierry being like, "Oh, actually, no, not for me, Deuce." Oh, okay, now Montreal basically stuck. We talked to obviously Wanyama about this, like stuck inside in Canada, unable to travel, unable to be together. And for him to build out of that to this, incredible. Their style of play, you mentioned Waterman, like whew, it's all their center backs. They possess the ball. They have, I mean, the way that they move the ball up the field and create goal scoring opportunities is really, really fun to watch. And I would guess that a lot of people have missed that this year if they're just watching their teams. Okay. Andre says we've talked too much about this. That's okay. We'll make up time here on newcomer of the year because we decided it was Georgi Petrovic after Doyle's rousing Carlos Vela, but a goalkeeper, but not for a playoff team speech. It is Georgi Petrovic. We've decided on other nominees here for us were Willy Agata, Facundo Torres, Bernadeschi, Thiago Almada obviously would be in this conversation, Mikel Ura, Velasco, Cucho Hernandez, Kubas, Nwobodo, Anders' favorite, Karol Swiderski. Anybody else we want to highlight?
No, I'm just, if Cucho comes back and scores three goals this week and Columbus makes the playoffs, I think I'll still vote for him because of the instant impact he created for a team that lacked what he brings completely before he got there. It wasn't that Miguel Barry was scoring these goals, but Cucho does it in a different way, or he's faster or a bigger name, whatever. It's literally didn't exist. He showed up, instant offense, off the bench, getting them results, and then has continued it all the way through. But I'm reserving, because it's newcomer, they don't play as many games, I get to see every game.
He's also the one.
Also, is he allowed to play against Charlotte? I don't know.
He was on the field. He was on the field.
Cool.
He's also the one I'd be most scared about seeing a full season of this list. I know there's some really good ones with Agata and Bernadeschi and you know the rest, but I would say Cucho for me if you were to go and you gave me a pick of who I could carry forward to next year. He'd be probably top of my list.
Maybe a golden boot keeper draft of some sort. You might say, "Oh yeah, okay." Dave, you corrected me. I said that I thought Cucho might be suspended, but it was just one game. It was for this weekend. All right, young player of the year, Jesus Ferreira.
Yep,
2022 presented by Body Armor winner. Our young player of the year winner as well. Other guys we considered: Ismael Kone, Tyus Magno, Facundo, Kwadwo Opoku had a really really awesome season. Obed Vargas was Andre's choice. But we overruled him. Cesar Araujo, Gago Slonina. I thought that's one that we'll get to maybe here in a little bit for teenager. Brenner, Leon Flock. But it's Jesus. He's just had an incredible season. He's an MVP candidate at this age. That tells the story. Comeback player of the year. Got a lot of different sort of choices here. Always do, whether it's injury, coming back from, as Ben Bear often said, being trash, and other assorted, issues. We went with Aaron Long. Tore the Achilles, had his national team career up in the balance, and has worked his way back in. I know some people are going to be yelling at us as I say that. It looks like he'll probably start some World Cup games, but his career looked like it was at a crossroads with that injury, and he came back very fast, got right back into this team. Red Bulls clinched playoff spot before decision day. Aaron Long is our comeback player of the year choice. Any other names that we want to throw out here? Kaylin, I think you might have had one.
Yeah, Kai Kamara. It's got to be Kai. I mean, think about this. This guy has, and I'm not, it's not just talking like narrative and the story. He has 8 goals and 7 assists this year for a team that has, is like fighting for potentially on the last day of the season, the top place in the Eastern Conference. If Philly slips up and Montreal wins, they're going to finish number one. And Kai has come, literally, look at his story, right? Coming through MLS, he's 38 years old. He was playing in Finland for a club. I had to look this up. IFK Helsingfors. I was watching him jump in cold plunges that weren't like actual cold tubs. They were just going in the water as rehab. And then he was on a beach in Sierra Leone, as Matt mentioned, talking about what it was like to be a free agent and trying to find a club to get another chance at it. He's come back to MLS. As I mentioned, 8 goals and 7 assists. He's now third all time. He's chased down literally the like legends of the game. And I don't know what you could think of as a comeback bigger than this, as a literal MLS comeback story.
Cup of Nations too, Sue, as well, after for Sierra Leone. Yeah, like and making history. What climate didn't he play in this last calendar year is a question you have to ask yourself.
What time zone? Yeah, I mean, it's been incredible. And 38 years old, I mean, there's nothing to say that this comeback story is like closing down or winding down anytime soon. So it's, I got to go Kai. Shout out to Aaron Long and come back and all that from injury is tough, but I love the Kai story, and he's getting it done on the pitch.
We have Arthur on this list who's been very good. I can't remember dates now, but Aiden Morris, I guess that was last year, but coming off the ACL tear of like, you started MLS Cup, you're the future, just the mentality to come back. And I think all of the best lineups for Columbus have had him on the field, whatever position it's in this year. That's one that I would mention as well.
You have to also mention Pato. At least I do. And that's all I'll say. Okay, now that we got the Pato mention in, let's go to the Extra Time Awards. We made these up to fill the cracks that needed to be filled in the MLS award season. So, of course, we go through, the D-mids, the fullbacks. We broke it down into Americans, Canadians, etc. But we start with a new award, the Gas Theorem Award. All right, second-year player who got a significant bump. There's no previous winners. It's all straight from the mind of David Goss. So what do we got, David?
I am going to go with MVP finalist and David Goss Golden Boot team member, Daniel Gosdag.
Brenner is right there for you, man. Brenner was trying to go back to Brazil. Like he was crapping on Skyline Chile. Like he was in the dumps, man. Like,
and I love what Brenner has done. I respect Brenner. I appreciate Brenner's work for the Theorem. I appreciate how committed Brenner was to purposely have a bad year last year so he could bounce back and have the year he had this year. But in the Theorem, Hani Mukhtar, of course, is the essence of the Theorem. So for Gosdag to get into the MVP finalist combo, that is Hani Mukhtar to a T. And so you got to go with the guy who's following the model.
Big congrats to Daniel Gosdag. I hope somebody at Union Training will inform him of this moment in his career.
I would like to see a live reaction to that.
Yeah. So what's the award for? Tell me again what the award's
you
for.
You were bad last year. You weren't that good. You're really good.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Great season for you. Okay. The American of the year, Matt Turner, was our American of the year in 2021. Our nominees this year.
By the way, I want a quick shout out to Emilio Rigoni for being the preseason favorite for Gosdag. Yes. I meant to say that before. I just saw it in my notes.
Yeah, good stuff. It deserved the airtime it got. Yeah. American of the Year, Brandon Vasquez, Jesus Ferreira, Georgi Mihailovic, Paul Areola, Alejandro Bedoya. We have honorable mentions as well. Brad Stuver, Diego Fagundes, who we're like, okay, Uruguayan or American, but he's American. And Diego Chara, also an American citizen. So he is in our honorable mentions. And our winner is Jesus Ferreira. Kaylin, is that deserved to you? Probably the number 9 in Qatar for the U.S.?
He's cleaning up right
now. Yeah, he is. My God.
extra time, all the awards. Yeah, I think this was the right call. There were some good ones. I mean, Brandon Vasquez stands out as another one that I think has had a really incredible season and, you know, playing a similar position. I think if it wasn't for Jesus, in some ways might be more prominent with the national team right now, or if you got in earlier. So, and then Georgi being injured, I already talked about Areola. I think he's been, you know, probably for me, I think the best interleague move of the
Wouldn't
year.
You know, we'll get to that, Kaylin.
We have an award. We'll were just that. That. Yeah. Uh-huh.
We went through so many in the rundown that I'm like, I don't know. No, what's an award?
Yeah, you were like, oh, Vasquez just keeps getting left behind. I'm like, oh, wait,
Let me make the point about Ferreira. He's 21 years old and he's got 18 goals. That is the second highest total for anyone aged 21 or under in league history. Only Stern John, way back in 1998, which was the highest scoring year in league history, scored 18 or more non-penalty goals as a 21-year-old. And of course, Stern John got sold for many millions of dollars, went on to have a great career for both Trinidad and Tobago and in England. I didn't think Jesus Ferreira had this in him. When they sold Pepe and they hired Nico Estevez and they were like, no, Ferreira is going to be our number 9. I was like, this isn't going to work, because he was so good last year as a shadow striker. He was so good playing underneath Pepe. You know, like I thought that was going to be his long-term home. So him to figure out on the fly, really, how to be an MLS number 9 and keep adding to his game. Like if you watch him now, he's making runs in behind. He wasn't doing that 3 months ago. He's had a pretty spectacular year.
I also put together the 24 under 24 list 10 years ago. And in their careers, most of the guys on that list didn't score as many as Ferreira scored this year. And he's 3 years younger than the players that were eligible on that list. So it sort of shows you the jump he's taken, the young DP contract as well. Obviously just well-deserved. All these guys are pretty influential to some of the top teams in the league.
That's what you want. Same thing.
Doing it after you get paid. That's that's impressive. That's I know the World Cup's waiting, but I feel like that is impressive to me. So yeah, shout out to him. And people talk a lot about there's all the conversation with the national team of like fitting the system. But FC Dallas have a very similar system, right? And I think the way he fits into that and the way Areola has come in, I think has really prepped him and primed him for this opportunity, and he plays in it week in, week out, which is, I think, you know, clearly working for him.
Clean it up. Canadian of the Year. You are honorary Canadian, David, so you can take this one. We nominated, after Tejan won it last year, deservedly so, Isabel Kone. Maybe if he plays another year in MLS, he'll get it, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Dane St. Clair, Kamal Miller, wonderful season for Montreal. Joel Waterman the same. Lucas Cavallini, a little bit of a mixed bag, but had his moments. And our winner, Dave, is Alistair Johnston. Take it away.
Yeah, Alistair Johnston, he was the one big addition to Montreal when Doyle mentioned they didn't bring in a DP of any sort, but they put out $1 million in allocation to bring him in. We thought it was going to be at right center back. It was at right wing back pretty much the entire season, but his flexibility is huge for them, his ability to underlap or overlap. And a key for Montreal has been different guys stepping up at different moments since Georgi went down with the injury. He has stepped up over the last few weeks. He has scored goals. He's come inside at times and helped create a little more and take some of the possession off the shoulders of other players. He's played alongside Corbo when he's had to rotate in and sort of brought strength to that right back spot. So Alistair Johnston, and this doesn't include the fact that he was as big a player in qualifying and as big a surprise in qualifying as anyone for Canada, doing it again at multiple positions. But this is just for his MLS play. And I think it's telling that all, you know, three of the Montreal defenders are here, for reasons in the attack and defense, Alistair Johnston kind of stands out.
CONCACAF Player of the Year. Chicharito won it last year. I mean, you could argue he should win it this year as well. He's a nominee. So is Carlos Vela. Romel Kyoto had a wonderful season. We went over that with you. Derek Etienne, Dab God for Haiti here. But we win again. There's some overlap. Andre Blake was our CONCACAF player of the year.
And just so everybody knows, this is CONCACAF players who are not Canadian US or Canada. Or American.
We exclude those. Okay, keep it going. I don't know if Andre's deleted this. I don't know if we were supposed to stop saying this. It used to be the Bobby Warshaw left back or right back of the year. It's our fullback of the year. Aaron Herrera was our winner in 2021. We made a defender, fullback, the defender of the year. So I think you can just assume Kai Wagner is going to be that guy. Brooks Lennon.
Wow!
Yeah, wow. I deleted it last year.
Anders.
I said I definitely did not say the bit was over.
I said the bit was over. I deleted it.
There you go.
It's a dead bit.
Bit's dead. This is the last year of the bit.
You know what and they say about it's comedy,
Kai,
Doyle?
It's Kai Wagner.
I've said Wagner every other time, I think, but okay. We can have the listeners do
the
count.
The key to comedy is if you do it past it being funny, then it becomes funny again.
It's like fashion. Yeah, once it goes out of fashion, you just start wearing it again. Brooks Lennon, Diego Palacios, John Tolkien, Alistair Johnson, DeAndre Yedlin, our other nominees here. Well, Kai Wagner's the guy, so any other names on this list that stand out to you guys that we haven't talked about that need being played up?
Tolkien would be best 11 a lot of years if Kai Wagner wasn't in the league. And what's interesting, we don't show it as much on this list, but we talked about it in the open. Left back was probably a stronger position than right back this year. There are years where you cannot find a left back to really deserve to be a best 11. So it was an odd switch this season.
Big jump up, by the way, from a young guy in Diego Palacios. That's one of the best stories of the year at fullback. A guy that was like maybe not reaching his potential, but now is going to go to a World Cup, it seems, with Ecuador and is close to the best 11.
I disagree with all you guys, but I don't think Diego Palacios has been that good this year.
Oh.
I still think he's unreliable defensively, and they are one of the best attacking teams in MLS. He's a part of that, but he's not a reason for it. And with Hollingshead playing as well as he does when he comes in, it kind of shows it.
Whoa. Okay.
That's a take.
All right.
That folks, is a take.
Oh, it's time now for our fast, reliable, secure D mid of the year presented by AT&T 5G, a new moniker for what was formerly the Chris Armas D mid of the year award. Big thanks to AT&T 5G for sponsoring, for supporting, for being right there with Extra Time all year long. And in typical Extra Time fashion, we have split the vote. It's two votes for three different candidates. How does that work when there's only five of us? I'll explain. Jose Martinez got two votes. Victor Wanyama got two votes. Ilya got my vote and Michele Giannone's vote in absentia. So I tacked that on. So we're 2-2-2. How do we break this? How do we decide? Because I guess we do need a winner. Technically, Victor Wanyama, of course, Doyle was in your best 11.
I had him in my best 11. I thought he was like there's no wrong pick among these three guys, among Jose Martinez, Ilya Sanchez, and Victor Wanyama. I just thought Wanyama was the most essential of the three in terms of pass before the pass stuff. So you take that, and then you take the physical element that he brings to the position where like you can't, if he locks you up, you're not getting past him. I thought like that just gave him the edge over the other two guys.
I went Martinez. I just in the matches that I watch, when he's on, he's just everywhere and he just is able to just completely change a game. I just love the way his attitude too. I know he's gotten like a bunch. He's got the double birds. So many
I was gonna
times.
Say, if pass before the pass for Wanyama, it's the bird after the scuffle for Jose Martinez.
I think the attitude as well, but the quality. So I don't know Martinez for me. When I'm watching the matches, I'm always like, yeah, I think this guy's like he stands out to me as the best.
I'm gonna flip my vote now to break this tie. Just on vibes, just on who we want to represent us as the fast, reliable, secure D-mid of the year presented by AT&T 5G. I'm going Jose Martinez. We got a best 11 for Victor Wanyama. We're getting an award for Jose Martinez. So congratulations.
It really adds to the to legitimacy of our awards as you switch votes in the middle of the show because Kalen said a bit one time.
Yay. There we go. That flipped me, all right? So congratulations to Jose Martinez. It's been really good this year. There's been a bunch of great players. We didn't mention Obinna Nwodo for FC Cincinnati. He's been absolutely crucial to their success. Cesar Araujo's got a lot of pub on this show as one of the good young players in this league. So this is a stacked position, and the 2021 winner, João Paulo, may be back next year as well for Seattle Sounders. So only will get more stacked. Our first year pro college player of the year, rookie of the year, was sent out to pasture and replaced by the young player of the year. But we've kept it going here. Javane Brown won it in 2021. We have nominees in Charlotte's Ben Bender, Roman Celentano, FC Cincinnati, GA draft pick, Thorio Farson for Houston, Jafal for DC, going down the list there, Jasper Lofelsund. That's one we'll talk about, and I have intentionally, because I don't want to mispronounce it.
Siki Ensembling.
Thank you. Thank you. I knew that I was going to struggle.
Who's been awesome for FC Dallas.
Yep.
What are you talking about, Doyle?
He's been okay. I don't think he belongs on this list.
I thought that was a pronunciation.
I would argue Ryan Saylor belongs on this list.
Ryan Saylor's been really good.
I clearly forgot that when we did the list.
Yeah, Ryan Saylor.
Yeah, we got him in though. Well
done. Ryan Saylor's been really good for Miami. Celentano's got to win this though. The list of goalkeepers who have come into the league straight out of college and you know played 2,500 minutes for a playoff team is really, really small. Andre Blake didn't do it. Steph Fry didn't do it. Nick Raimondo didn't do it. Matt Turner didn't do it. You know, this is
Brad Guzan right now.
I mean, you might have to go back 15 years to Brad Guzan to find the last goalkeeper who came directly out of college into a starting lineup for a playoff team. And were they playoffs in Guzan's first year?
Chivas maybe was. Not the first. The first.
Really? Maybe it's the second year, right?
I think it's the second year.
Yeah, second year when Bob took over. So
Kalen's an expert on that era.
Guzan came on a recruiting trip to Berkeley and didn't come.
He went to soccer powerhouse South Carolina.
Yeah, Berkeley had to settle for Steph Fry during. Yeah.
To be fair, era. Charleston's a.
What?
Okay. Also, when you were mentioning standout goalkeepers who are like standing on their head, I thought back to Steph Fry playing for Toronto FC and the numbers that the amount of saves that he was making during those years as well.
Yeah. So I just like Jasper Lofelsund is a great story. He's been really, really good for this RSL team. But Roman Celentano is in pretty rare company for this team. And even if somehow FC Cincinnati screw up down in DC and don't make the playoffs, I think he's still the guy for this award.
I voted Lofelsund. Doyle gave a good argument for me when he said the two hardest positions on the field are center mid and center back. And this guy played right back through all of college and then came into MLS, was an MLS Next Pro signing. And then 3 days later, RSL was like, I think you'll be pretty good. They ended up selling Everton Luiz because of how good he was. And he's been one of their best starters in central midfield. Over 19 starts this year. He's been a big part of what they've done well. So that's where I went for this one with Lofelsund. So that's why. And Celentano, that's not a knock. Amazing draft pick. Love him. Excited for what he'll be. But center mid out of college. Pretty impressive.
Yeah. Andre says we have to move on. Imagine it. To Teenager of the Year we go, though. 2021, Ricardo Pepi. That one's a no-duh choice from us. Here are some nominees for you. Owen Wolf, good season from him. Obed Vargas, truncated season, but really good when he was available. Danny Leyva, sort of in the same boat when he's been on the field. He's been pretty good. Cade Cowell, not as good as last year, but still, for his age and his profile, very good. Paxton Aronson, wish he got more time, but hey, Gazdag's in front of him. That's a David Gostherum guy, all right? Jack McGlynn really impacted the Union. We've talked a lot about that, how he's sort of helped them become more of an attacking team, productive. Brian Gutierrez, under the radar, just like John Duran in Chicago. But we went with another Chicago guy in Gaga Slonina. I sort of muscled this pick over the line. I just feel like, you know, we're talking about, you know, hey, look, here's what Celentano did. Well, here's what Gaga Slonina is doing at 17 and now 18. Gaga Slonina also 8-figure transfer. Has he been perfect all the time? No. Has he gone through a crazy sort of roller coaster ride this year as an 18-year-old? Yes, with a bunch of different interests as far as the transfer market goes, and finally a transfer, choosing between Poland and the U.S. I mean, for him to take all of this on and perform at the level that he has is absolutely incredible. And we're talking about Celentano and MLS, but we're talking about Gaga Slonina maybe in the Champions League one day and maybe the number one for the U.S. So
the difficult part for me looking at this is most of these players are actually on playoff teams. So if you go at Owen Wolf, Vargas, well, I know Vargas didn't, but he's won a CONCACAF Champions League.
Oh, God, almost, right? You think Sounders, you think playoffs, huh?
But Aronson, McGlynn, you know, you see these guys and they've been able to be integrated into these teams. And for Chicago to have three players on this list with Gutierrez, Duran, and Slonina and be outside is difficult. And I think the one bright spot is it's been these young guys. But then with Slonina leaving, that's tough. John Duran now linked with a bunch of European teams, some pretty big ones, Chelsea as well, actually. And I think Liverpool have been two of the teams that have been mentioned alongside. So, you think that the timing of these guys and not being able to utilize them in a good moment. And that's, I think, because the club has had to build so much else kind of around them that hasn't been great. But I think that also made me also want to go back with my vote in this case for Slonina, because he's been the kind of steady hand, there's the pun, didn't mean to do that, but in the back. There were times where he kind of had dips and came up, but I think he stood out for me still on this list as
that's funny. This is not really a pun and it's not funny. That's what makes it so funny.
Oh no, this is gonna happen again where Gaz just like goes into a 10-minute laughing fit while I'm saying something.
Okay, I'm good. I would say this. If you want to vote Obed Vargas, now we got to go back and redo the whole thing because we did not bring CCL into most of this. So if Obed Vargas is teenager of the year on 10 starts in MLS, no, it's because of CCL final. Now we're doing coach of the year again. Now we've got Christian Roldan in best 11s. You can't do that, Doyle. You can't change it now.
It's Obed Vargas. He walked in. He walked in, and took minutes for like the Sounders lost an MVP caliber D mid, and a 16-year-old walked in the biggest game in the region, the second leg of the CCL final, played 61 minutes, played 375 minutes overall in CCL as the Sounders won, and then coming out of that, the Sounders were really good for about 6 weeks. Until Obed Vargas got hurt. He was the most impactful teenager in the league this year.
What does it make you the teenager of the year?
It's the teenager of the
absence
year.
Is
he played 1,300 minutes. He's really good. Also, shout out to Daniel Edelman. He should have been on that list. We gotta move on, man.
By the way, this is a complete aside, which I know Anders will love, but it's hilarious to me that the final game of the season for Seattle is against San Jose, and they still call it the Heritage Cup, baby. Tradition. Tradition comes through. It's just a rubber match. El Senior Super Sub. Oh, actually, Geezer of the Year. That's 35 plus. Kai Kamara's there. It's new. We give the young players props.
Weeby literally tweeted this morning, give us new and more categories.
Well, this was always on the list, Doyle. We always needed to. We're not all 35.
What's the title of this?
We can change it. It doesn't have to be that. What should it be?
It's like the
Golden Years.
Old Man Soccer.
Golden years.
The veteran. I want to do like a veteran tuck award where you get.
Actually, somebody you won't be surprised. Somebody did suggest that we do the tuck of the year.
Yeah. Ray Gattis. I mean, I feel like he should get a lifetime achievement award for that. But
and Sam Piet
as well. Yeah, there's a bunch. We got to move on. But yeah.
the golden years award, we're giving it to Ali Bedoya.
The OGs.
Yeah. We're giving it to Ali Bedoya. I know Kai Kamara. That's who you'd want it for. Kaylin, it's Ale and Kai can split this one.
But
actually,
Ale Bedoya has an advantage by being younger.
Yeah, he's barely qualified for this.
Yeah, that's fair. We'll split it half for Bedoya,
he was 34,
half for Kai Kamara. Yeah. That only increases the prestige of the award
until he was 35.
Yeah, he was
mind blowing.
Crazy.
Yeah. He's crazy.
I'm good with giving this to Bedoya, but I still think Kai should get the comeback.
Okay, we'll take this offline. El Senior Super Sub of the Year.
I just throw in this Scruffy Jack tweet, Bearded Jack. Shout out to Bearded Jack Legend, which is basically just taking old MLS free agency rules and then putting whoever should be on the tops of those lists, which I'm in favor of.
He said the MLS Lifer Award should go to the best player this season who's over 28 or 29 or 30, you choose, has only played in MLS. So yes, I did not realize that is basically the old free agency world. So, yeah.
I can't believe that Shea Salinas isn't on this list. I mean,
If we were a real award show, we'd do the like slow song and they'd flash it on the board and it'd be Shea and Drew Moore and, they're not dead. They're just retired. But El Senior Super Sub of the Year. Anderson Julio was our pick last year. Imabotang got thrown into this one. Corey Burke. Tiago Andrade, hilariously, Joseph Martinez was nominated by you, Kalen, which I couldn't have enjoyed more. And Dejan Jovalich got our votes for the El Seno Super Sub of the Year. Managed to impact the game off the bench a ton. Level Up Player of the Year. How do you define it? Any way you want. Sean Nealis was our 2021 winner. We had thoughts about Georgi Mihailovic or Tyus Magno or Daniel Gazdag, who, of course, has already won stuff, so probably won again. Jesus Ferreira, John Tolkien, Alistair Johnson, Diego Fagundes. But it is a clear and obvious choice here, Doyle. It is Brandon Vasquez, who went from a guy who really couldn't get on the field with any sort of regularity in this league, let alone hold down the starting job for a playoff team. Again, we're saying that before Cincy make it, so I hope that's not the biggest jinx ever on them. And was in the conversation for the U.S. men's national team and was in the golden boot race. Brandon Vasquez in 2022, he leveled up.
Yeah, he had a good like 6 or 7 game finish to the 2021 season under Tyrone Marshall, who was the interim head coach, and like they finally started playing real soccer in Cincinnati for the first time in the club's history, and they looked competent, and he was scoring goals and putting assists on the board, and like I came into this season thinking like this guy could score 10, 11 goals. Be a good solid target man in this wing. He could have kind of like a Brian White season. He's at 17-5 and like deservedly got national team buzz from us, but from everybody else. From everybody else,
yeah,
too.
From us.
And I think your name dropped.
Whether it's with the US or Mexico, this guy's gonna have an international future. And I think this season, 17-5, his first season as a starter after like not being even a primary reserve over the past couple of years, the definition of leveling up.
We have 5 more awards to go, so let's try to keep it going. Executive of the Year 2021, Porg Smith won this one. Colorado Rapids finished atop the Western Conference. Did not happen this year, so he's not in the running this year. Ernst Tanner of the Union, John Thorington of LAFC, Chris Albright of FC Cincinnati, Claudio Reyna of Austin, and Chris Henderson of Inter Miami were our nominees on this one. And then, of course, the CONCACAF Executive of the Year went to Garth Lagerwey. But, as David said, if you're going to count CONCACAF, you got to change everything else, so we're not going to do it. It was a split vote between Albright and Henderson. Do we split this here, or do we say, it's hard to say because we don't know if Inter Miami are going to make the playoffs. We don't know if FC Cincinnati are at this point in time. Which would be more impressive, Cincy making it or Inter making it? Inter had the issue with the rules.
Yeah, I think they're both doing an incredible job, but since they won 3 straight wooden spoons and now they're about to make the playoffs. They were the worst team in the world. And so my vote went to Albright.
My vote went to Chris Henderson because Inter Miami is an expansion team without any of the money, a missing DP spot, and zero trust in their club from anyone associated to the world of soccer. Even when he made mistakes, like Nick Marksman, he brought in Drake Callender, who has been statistically a top 10 goalkeeper this season. Draft picks, we talked about Ryan Saylor, and Mbaki's been huge for them as well. Free agent signings in Major League Soccer, Pasuelo for $150,000 in allocation money, Campagna, which kept them afloat the beginning of the year when they had no money to spend on any players. McVie's been a utility piece that's been awesome for them as well. And again, Pizarro is taking a DP spot. They gave away Carranza. They gave away Pellegrini, and in dealing with all of that, they still will compete for a playoff spot either way, they make it or not. And let's be real, whatever's gone on with him and Phil Neville, it doesn't seem like there's ever been friction while we've talked on the outside about is Phil Neville the right guy and all of that stuff. So I think it's Chris Henderson to me.
Both have been very good for me. And I think the managers deserve a lot of credit as well, too. I have trouble not knowing these teams might not make the playoffs. So I have trouble giving an award if you don't make the playoffs in MLS to somebody. So I went with LAFC and John Thorington. I just think when you look at how difficult it is for teams to turn over and change and evolve, and you lose a manager, or manager moves on, whatever, however you want to slice it. And then you come in and you have to go out. And I think the way they went out and got very specific type of player that was outside of the general model that LAFC have gone, when they'd always gone abroad mostly, but they went within MLS to get MLS experience with players like Ilie and Kellen Acosta and Kripo, and they really strengthened the team. And then they go out at the end and make all these kind of big, you know, Chiellini and Bale and all these, and trying to like fit all these pieces together into a coherent roster that makes sense and win the supporter shield. If they do the double, if they go on and do win MLS Cup, I found this has to be the executive of the year. So that was where my vote went.
I would tend to agree with that. If they win MLS Cup and all those moves in the summer, I mean, and look, we're pushing it down the line, but these are our awards, so we can do that. To me, it's Thorington. If they don't, I think he's right there, and you have three deserving finalists, and we'll push this decision off. We got an extra week, right?
If they don't, for the reasons that it looks like, there's no way he can be one of the top three. If you refoot the roster in the middle of the year on the way to a record-setting points and they don't win MLS Cup because Bale or Chiellini or Buong or whatever is not
so then it's
right
Ernst
pieces.
Tanner for you. It's Ernst Tanner at that point.
Why would it be him? No, I said Chris Henderson and Chris Albright.
Well, yeah, but who would be the third? You said he can't be in the top three.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right. Cool.
The defender of the year is a fourth division left back that he found. Gazdag, Mikel Oure, picking up Julian Carranza. Do you need me to do more?
No. I was trying to get you going there. Well done. The blockbuster transaction of the year, because we had one transaction of the year in MLS Mechanism, and I've broken it into two. We have the blockbuster and the bargain bin.
Absurd. this is the most absurd. This is going to be a 16-hour show.
This is how much I love this league. Blockbuster transaction of the year. We voted Doyle as a group, although there was some dissension for the Julian Carranza theft is what Anders described it as. Julian Gressel trade was here. Mark Delgado, Albert Rusnak is a free agent. Ilya maybe is a free agent. You could count those. Crepeau or Acosta, Lewis Morgan, Paul Areola, Philly fleecing the fire for Casper Ciebielka.
What is the level it has to hit to be a blockbuster?
I think 500K we decided.
So Mark Delgado was 400K. Get him off the list.
Ilya and Rusnak were free agents.
Free agents.
Yeah, but it was, you know, the
but
level.
But then you got to put Pozuelo.
Those were TAM deals, okay? Those were TAM deals. Those are blockbusters. Mm-hmm. I'm keeping it together. we'll figure this out next year. We'll get the details right. Julian Carranza, Doyle, why is that the blockbuster transaction of the year?
Because the Union got a $6 million Argentine youth international striker for $500,000 worth of allocation cash that they changed it from a loan to an outright purchase or trade from Miami the day before those two teams played, so that they would have him available for that game. And he's got 14 goals and 9 assists for the second best attack in the league. And as I mentioned, he is one of the elite defensive forwards in the league. The Union are going to be able to sell this guy for $5 or $6 million next year or the year after, at least $5 or $6 million. They paid $500,000 of funny money. We've never seen a deal like this in MLS. And, you know, Chris Albright was on the wrong end of this one. Or Chris Henderson was on the wrong end of this one. But he's on the right side of the next category, which is the non-blockbuster trade of the year.
Bargain bin. We gotta brand it.
Before we get there,
right?
I just want
brand
the world it. To know that Kalen and Andrew voted for Paul Areola over Lewis Morgan, who had less production for double the cost at the same price.
We've established the statistical difference between Lewis Morgan and Paul Areola.
Cool. Just wanted to make sure everyone knew that. Because I
the bargain bin, Miami got Alejandro Pozuelo, who's a former MVP who's still in his prime, for $150,000 worth of allocation cash. Since they got Alejandro Pozuelo, they're 7 wins, 3 losses, and 2 draws. They're one of the best teams in the league when he takes the field. They were just gifted an elite number 10. And now they have a DP who, they might be able to keep him for the next 5 years and have him be an essential part of that midfield, a winning team. They might even be able to keep him on a TAM deal. Like, it was just an absolutely brilliant move from Chris Henderson to, take advantage of Pozuelo falling into his team's lap.
What the hell were RSL in Colorado, maybe even in Austin, probably San Jose, potentially Vancouver? What were any of those teams doing? I would assume, and from what we've heard, Toronto was working with Pozuelo and Miami was interesting to him, but offer 100K more.
Yeah.
200K more.
Yeah.
All right.
Still would have been a bargain bin transaction. Other nominees here. Jacob Schaffelberg, interleague loan. That's a good one. Shinyashiki and Rios, both under 500K to Charlotte. We saw what that did for them over the course of this year. Also, Brant Bronico, back in 2020, they and the Fire swapped fourth round super draft picks, and like Bronico was part of it. Of course, he was a native son, so that's why they went and got him, but he was an every game starter basically for them. And also, you know, honorable mention for FC Cincinnati and Chris Albright's use of the allocation order to just like fleece every team anywhere.
400,000 for not doing anything.
Yeah, that was awesome. We end here. Personality of the year in MLS. Vanni Sartini won it in 2021. We had Chicharito. We had Miguel Angel Ramirez, who called his team a word we can't say on this show. We have Adrian Heath, who also always says things that make us raise an eyebrow. Caleb Porter's here. Phil Neville is here. Giorgio Chiellini is here. Pedro Gallese was nominated by Dave as well for this award.
I love Pedro Gallese.
Joseph Martinez is our 2022 personality of the year. We get to determine how this, what personality means in this case. As I see it, Joseph Martinez is always himself. He's never afraid to share that self with the world. He has a thing against chicken and rice that, you know, he just can't stand it. Got to go on the floor. He has publicly battled essentially the front office of Atlanta United. He has gotten in fights with his head coach. He has been forced to the bench, then come off and scored bicycle kicks. He has just always unapologetically been Joseph Martinez, and it seems always will be, and I don't look forward to a day that he's not in this league. He is impossible to tear your eyes away from, and he's always a story.
The creme de la creme for him was when he was suspended for getting in a fight with his coach in the locker room, and the player who scored a hat trick dedicated the win to him in what was supposed to be a positive moment for the rest of the team and Gonzalo Pineda. That is next level stuff.
What a legend. Joseph Martinez. All right, those are our 2022 Extra Time Awards. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Anders. I know it's been a marathon here for us, so... we'll call this one good. We got more coming on Thursday. Full preview of Decision Day. Obviously, tune into MLS Today through the rest of the week. David Goss doing yeoman's work there. And we'll leave you with that. Enjoy your week. Adios.